just me introing this one because we decided to release this as a special kind of end of week episode of the podcast, because last week I got to sit down with Omnico's CEO Mel Taylor. Now, they do a lot of work in theme parks around the world, and I got to chat to him about exactly what Omnico do, how they work with different theme parks. And the conversation led to technology in theme parks, what's next for them, you know, how kind of that Disney model of using magic bands and syncing everything up together is being worked across other theme parks around the world. He talks about some of the work and partnerships that Omnico have and the theme parks that they work with. And we also chat about his favorite theme park attraction, food, and, you know, the future of theme parks. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
So if I start off then, just tell you a little bit about Omnico.
Yeah.
So your first question was like, introduce myself. So I've worked for Omnico for 2.5 years now, and I'm not a theme park veteran at all. I'm an IT person for the last 35 years. But joining Omnico has been a fantastic opportunity, actually, because our clients for the last 15 years have been the major theme parks in basically Orlando and California and across America. So you know, in terms of who they are, 7 of the top 11 theme parks across the world use Omnico technology. So I was quite interested to get involved and visiting these theme parks and customers and going through what we did. And basically that history, where it all started for Omnico, is very simply around point of sale in the park. So okay. People in the park are buying food and beverage, or they're buying merchandising. And that is typically, you know, in the past, and I'll come on to the future, you know, as we talk, but in the past, that's all around, you know, like a fixed point of sale, a till or a kiosk or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And then Omnico progressed into something called entitlements. So because if you think about the data that's stored when somebody buys something, it's the product data, so it's the merchandise. It's the people data, you know, so what was, you know, who bought it could actually be captured, and also the price for that product. So that price, who the people are and what the product is the data behind it. So Omnico moved into entitlements, which is more about building meal plans, dining plans. Okay. When the parks run promotions, so, you know, you buy your ticket and you've got a photograph opportunity with the family, or you've got a meal opportunity or a discount on a beverage or an offer of some kind, that's what's built into your entitlement. And that's where Omnico really progressed over the basic point of sale. And then in later years, also in moving into like inventory and stock, so you could buy something in a park and then you can, rather than carry it around the park with you, you can arrange for it to be shipped to home or shipped to your hotel or shipped to your concierge, mm-hmm. or hire a car. So it's kind of like an inverse of the retail world where we also operate, where people buy online and pick up in store, right?
Yeah.
Kind of the opposite of what we see at Tesco's and all those kind of places every day. You know, you're buying a part, but you want it shipped somewhere convenient. So that was kind of what our history was. And as I mentioned, that, you know, the past is where the world and the people sort of waited in line behind some kind of physical device. I mentioned tills and kiosks, but if you think about the whole experience, so the travel to the park, where you actually park your car, if you've gone in a car, the entrance, so the ticketing into the park, and then the buying of food, all of those from an IT technology point of view are separate, what I call customer journeys. Mm. So if you look at this research we've been doing, it's all about how for the customer can the experience in the park or the attraction be actually better and connected together. So
that's really interesting. Yeah, I was just thinking it's really interesting because Disney, I think in particular, have really tried in the last few years with the introduction of Magic Bands and the My Disney Experience app. They really try to start thinking about how all of what you've just described can be joined together.
Exactly, yes. And that's what, so I say I joined here 2.5 years ago, and that was the journey we embarked on, because I sort of had a vision, and when Omnico have this vision, that although that is a consumer world that I described in the past, the future consumer world is really all mobile and sort of cloud-based. So when you're walking around your park, you've got some kind of mobile device, and everything is on that mobile device. So we started to build a new technology. So basically, you can book everything before you travel. All of your entitlements, and you mentioned bands there, so all of your entitlements is on some kind of media. And that media could be a card, the media could be a band, or as I see actually where it will actually finish up is a mobile app, right?
Yeah.
So all of that entitlement, what you bought, will be on that mobile app. And when you look at the research we did around, I think you were looking at our Chinese barometer press release that we did in the Chinese barometer research. If you think about it there, the mobile adoption has been huge in Asia. They jumped straight to 4G. They didn't have to go through all the pain we've been through with 2G and 3G. They're already on, you know, there's a lot more network over there when you go over with your phone. And the consumers expect everything on their mobile. Now, there's a dilemma when they're building parks over there, because effectively labor is still cheap. So they could build everything in the traditional way, you know, in what I call the legacy type of architectures, but actually the consumers will be wanting everything cloud-based and everything via a mobile app, right? So
yeah,
the kind of technology that the parks are all now trialing and adopting, using this new world, if you think about the benefits, I mean, you can have... You, when you get to the park, you'll be able to see, well, that ride, the queue length is 5 minutes. You can even do virtual queuing. I was looking at one of the new parks that Universal...
Volcano Bay.
So with Volcano Bay, you know, it's virtual queuing. And if that concept takes off, that will roll out very, very quickly. And that the problem all of the legacy people in the industry, so you know all of the traditional players in that industry, is they built up many types of, say, commerce areas, so whether it's food, whether it's merchandise, whether it's ticketing, photo kiosks, the shows that they run, all of those could be running on different IT platforms. So just like in the world of retail, where you have the traditional bricks and mortar and you have e-commerce, and they're different platforms, and it's hard for companies to connect all that together, the same challenge is faced by the industry today. How do they connect all of that together, so the people information, the price information, the product information, into one platform where the data can be easily shared via mobile?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I think, you know, Universal and Disney, and certainly in Orlando, are really kind of the shining examples of where they've started to think about that. And I think, you know, with the Magic Band, you know, the only reason it's Magic Band is because Disney know it's cool, you know, people can wear it. It's something cool to wear when you're walking around the park. And actually, they will sell a ton more of merchandise because they offer them in different colours, different limited edition bands, all that kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, just having it as an app on your phone, which obviously they do, but that kind of all supports the central Magic Band. And it's interesting because a few years ago when they said, right, we're introducing free Wi-Fi in all of our parks in Orlando, a lot of people thought, this is fantastic. I can't believe they're doing this, and I can't believe they're doing this for free. Well, yeah, they're doing it for free, but the only reason they're doing it for free is to make things easier for you to make that purchase or get to your next stop. You know, it was all kind of around that My Disney Experience kind of marketplace that they were building.
It's fantastic for them, because if you think about that in the retail world, we don't want to share our information with retailers, right? So putting beacons and or free Wi-Fi in the store, people are still reluctant because they don't want those marketing messages. They don't want that push messaging. But when you're in a park, you actually do.
Yeah.
Because you want to get the most out of your day. You want to see as many of the attractions as you can, and you want to have go to the right restaurant at the right time, etc. And I remember when I used to take my kids to park, I've had kind of two theme park lives. When my kids were young, we did the classic go to Disney, go to Disneyland, go to SeaWorld, and we didn't see all of the park.
Yeah.
Because you wait 2 hours for the ride the kids want to go on, yeah? Whereas, talk about what's been talked about with Volcano Bay, you can plan that day ahead and know that you're going to arrive at the park at a certain time. You know exactly where you're going to put the car. You know exactly what entrance you're going to go in, and you know you're going to go to this ride first of all, and you've got that, that show booked at the right time, and that your food is going to be delivered to your seat. Mm-hmm. And that is obviously great for the consumer, because it's a better customer journey for the consumer. But to be frank, it's also good for the park, isn't it? Because the park will be able to leverage that and leverage more money from each of the visitors to the park, right? Which is how the park gets an ROI on this new technology.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting, because something I read and published yesterday was that Universal were actually testing robots at their Cabana Beach resort. So they're testing robots that will take kind of small items like toothbrush, towels, that kind of thing, to guests in their room. So like kind of room service robots.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, and people kind of want the ability to be able to do that, and potentially not even have to talk to someone. Go on the app and go, oh, I've forgotten this, I need this, and then get that notification, your robot assistant will be with you in 5 minutes. It's that kind of thing. And I think, planning your day is super important. If you're in Orlando for 2 weeks, you have to have your days planned out. And I think that Disney do that really well. Universal is starting to get better. With the virtual queuing at Volcano Bay, it's perfect for a water park, because, you don't want to be waiting in the 30-degree Florida sunshine for a water ride for an hour. Whereas now you can go, okay, it's going to remind me on my band exactly when I need to go to this. I can go and relax in the lazy river for a couple of hours.
Exactly, yeah. I think our research in Asia was interesting, because it spoke about the respondents said that they expected robots to be giving them personal assistance in the next 2 to 3 years. I think about half of them expected that as kind of in their top five of things that they expected. And, we wouldn't have thought of that, but that whole culture in Asia is far more accepted, right, that you'll get that, the robot experience, and the whole of automation and the using of robots. And this kind of links into where the rides will go with virtual reality, right? All of that new tech will be there, in the whole of society over the next 10 years. And I think that's what's so exciting about theme parks, because, to be frank, the money's there, because the growth is there in the industry, especially the growth in Asia, that will fuel all of this new technology.
Definitely, yeah. You do often see, it's funny, you do often see theme parks kind of innovating first, and then kind of like, I guess 4D is a great classic example of that. You saw theme parks experimenting with 4D, 20, 30 years ago, whereas now you're just, certainly in the UK, you've only just really started to see 4D cinemas, for instance.
Yeah. So I remember that. I was going into rides 25 years ago, where there was a bit of wind in your face and a bit of spray, and it was I remember Space Mountain. Do you remember that when it came out?
Yeah,
and that was one of the first ones. But and then I sort of had 20 years of not going to theme parks and joined this company, and then started going, and then I To be honest, I'm not a great roller coaster rider. You know, I find it pretty scary and apprehensive.
Yeah.
And I went to Tivoli Park in Copenhagen. If you've ever been there.
No, I've never been.
It's a great park. They've got a traditional old roller coaster, which I do like, but they've also got a ride called the Demon Ride.
Okay.
And that's just a classic inverted ride. And was there talking to them about things. I went on the ride for free, and I held my breath for one and a half minutes, terrified going around on the ride. And then at the end of it, because it was like 8 o'clock in the evening and the park was quite quiet, I got to ride it again for free. And I thought I must start to learn these rides better. And then later on, I was over in Orlando, and going back to your 4G point, I went on the there's a ride called the Manta Ride at SeaWorld.
The one where you lay down, yeah?
Yeah. Which is absolutely terrifying. Yeah. And that was my I didn't think I was going to survive that. But you get off and you've got all the thrill of having done it, etc. But the SeaWorld is actually one of our customers. And they had a ride there, and I didn't get to ride on it, called the Kraken Ride.
Yeah, yeah.
The Kraken Ride is actually being upgraded to virtual reality this year.
That's right,
And I know they're very, very excited about that and the 4G experience that that's going to live. But I'm disappointed that I never got to ride it. I should have rode that instead of the Manta Ride.
It's funny you say that, because Kraken, because I've been going to theme parks since I was three, and Orlando specifically is an area that I keep going back to. And my very first kind of inverted coaster, because I was scared of roller coasters until my fiance forced me to go on one about 7 years ago.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And
we share that together.
Yeah. Yeah. So my first coaster was actually Kraken. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the VR on that one. But if you do get a chance, go definitely check out Kraken, and also check out their new one, Mako. That is terrifying. Yeah. That is really, really, it's super fast, and you come out of your seat a couple of times, which is very scary, especially if you're at the back.
Yeah, it's quite interesting how for me, I'm in my 50s now, how these rides, they become, you know, when you're in your 20s, you just ride them, you know, and then you go back in your 50s and you start riding because you think, well, these are my customers and I need to actually feel what the customer feels. And he's like, well, I'm very, very apprehensive about this. But when you come off them, there is an absolute thrill. Yeah. So I'm really interested to ride the Kraken when it opens again this year. Yeah.
It looks awesome.
Okay.
Great. Well, unless there's anything else you wanted to say around your involvement with the theme park industry, should I move on to the next question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, obviously, you've now been on some theme park attractions, as you were saying, within the last year. You've started revisiting theme parks again recently. It'd be great to hear from you what some of your favourite attractions are and why, really.
Well, those are my favourite attractions that I've just spoken about. The Manta Ride, I think, as I said, it was disorientating when you go on it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
because
you kind of sit on it, and then all of a sudden you get put down, don't you? And it's like, whoa.
Well, you get on and it moves you upside down
straight
away. And that's very, very disorientating. You're really not sure what's going to happen to you. And it's only when you get to the top, then you get into the right direction. But then immediately you're plunged into, you know, corkscrews and rolls, and you're upside, you know, you're just disorientated for the whole time. And it kind of got halfway through and you think that's over. And then actually the second part of the ride is even worse than the first part of the ride.
Yeah, you start getting water splashed in your face and all sorts.
Exactly. When you come down and you go over the water, it actually comes up and starts, you know, you feel the water on your face and you think you're going to go into the actual water. Yeah. So I love that. But what I really want to do, and again, one of the parks we work with is one of the operators is Six Flags. And I've never had chance to go there, but I must do it this year, is to go to Maryland and ride the there's a traditional old wooden roller coaster that they have called the Wild One.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how old it is, but I think it's like 80 years old, something like that. And so every time I meet with people from there, and there's some ex-colleagues of ours who actually work for that organisation at the moment, people who used to work for Omnico, and they say that is one of the must-do rides in the industry. So it's quite interesting. We're talking about innovation and new stuff, but I actually personally, it's probably an age thing, would really, really want to go and ride the wild one in Maryland Six Flags. So.
Yeah, no, that sounds great, because I think at Busch Gardens in Tampa, I think they've closed it now. They had a really kind of old wooden coaster, and you know what? Like going on that, it kind of throws you around sometimes more than new roller coasters do. It's kind of quite wobbly and shaky, and it's just as scary, I think, sometimes than the inverted coasters can.
Oh, absolutely, because I rode the mountain coaster in Tivoli Gardens, and the mountain coaster is an old wooden one. Again, it's I don't know, it's like 60, 70 years old, something like that. It was one of the first ones built. And that is, you know, you feel the whole thing moving, right? Because there's that different tech. So that's something that I really want to do. And then it's just the whole, so as I said, the integration then of the technology in terms of the guest experience and where the guest is going across the park. So, and the actual virtual reality of the ride. So I was at the IAPA show in November last year in Orlando, and I don't know if you've managed to get to one of those shows, but everything is around virtual reality now.
I haven't had a chance to go, but no, that's interesting that that's the way it's going. It's interesting that Disney still haven't done it yet. And I'm wondering, you know, because I've got PlayStation VR. I bought it just before Christmas, which is really awesome. But you get those kind of warnings that say, you know, if you're under the age of 12, you really shouldn't be using it. I'm wondering how Disney and the likes are getting around that technology so that obviously everyone in the family can enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it's like not all... It goes back to how the industry's run for many years, though, because you don't have to have all of the scary thrills, put it like that, like of an inverted roller coaster where you're hanging upside down for 2 minutes. You can still have all of the immersive experience on a friendlier ride. So if you think about some of the like under sevens attractions that have been, you know, very, very popular in the likes of Disney over the years, all of that will be upgraded as well into a digital experience. So there's one that's just opened in Dubai, Motion Gate.
Yep.
So the Motion Gate Park, that is fantastic inside, because it's not a thrill ride, but it's the experience of seeing all of the video and the sound systems in there is way beyond what I've seen in Orlando in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Dubai. It's right up there on my list of places that I really want to go to, just because over the last few years, the level of technology, and not just technology, but theme parks that they've introduced, is just astounding. Like, I really do want to go and check it out.
Yeah, it's great. I've been over there. So there's a Legoland, a Motion Gate, a Bollywood, and all of those are connected together in the middle by what they call Riverland, which is where they've got all of the shopping and fine dining experiences. And that's where, when you mentioned, like, where do we see this going, it's what I call, or Omnico like to call, the experience economy. And it's a bit like what you were talking about on your what you're trying to do with your website, because there is this increasing trend between combining shopping, leisure, and creating new forms of entertainment experiences for the whole family. So, you know, that if you think about it, the traditional shopping experience, when if you go to a mall and a mall in the UK or a shopping centre in the UK, it's just shops with some fast food, right?
Yeah.
When you go to Dubai, you go to the shopping malls there, they have attractions there. Mm. They have attractions for the kids, you know, and they have virtual reality rides there, and they have fine dining experiences as well as fast food experiences, as well as all the retail. So the way they run those shopping areas, that they're linked to a whole guest experience in the same way that the theme parks are trying to kind of move towards merchandise and retail, where you have over there. In the UK, retailers are trying to move towards how do I get people to actually come to my physical location, whereas in the Middle East and in Asia, they're just building all of that in one area. Mm. So shopping, malls, hotels, attractions, theme parks, it's all in one area.
Yeah, so, I think that's a really good point, because, you know, for those listening to this podcast from in the UK, we'll see the high street, right? You'll see shops closing, you'll see there's always coffee shops, charity shops, fast food joints, but that's pretty much it. And I think it's a really good point. You know, we at the company that I work for came up with an idea on how to kind of digitalize the high street and improve that, because that's what people want. You know, unless you're going to offer something that's better than going to the likes of Amazon, why would you even go into to a high street store?
Exactly, yeah, but you would if there's a, you know, if there's a true leisure experience there, right?
So, exactly.
Yeah, the experience economy is about the sort of colliding of retail and entertainment into one space, right? So it's kind of like phase one was, you know, you go to a cinema, you buy a ticket for the cinema, and you buy some popcorn and some Coke with it, right?
Yeah.
Phase two has been all of the, you know, there's the virtual reality, and now in cinemas, people actually sit down and they have a dining experience and a bottle of wine while they're watching the movie, right? Mm. Phase three will be all of that linked together with shopping and theme parks, and that's basically what they've built in Dubai. And it is, you know, I've been over there a few times in the last year, and it's just a different scale in terms of how they've connected. At the beginning of our conversation, we spoke about the connected world and all of this being a connected experience, and why IT, so information technology, needs to be behind that. The advantage they have is they're not starting with any legacy stuff, right? They don't have legacy HR systems and legacy point of sale systems and no Wi-Fi in the park. They have all, you know, they can build it from the ground up. And that's the advantage that they have. And as new parks get built in China and Vietnam, Korea, Malaysia, those new parks, although they will be, you know, based on the IP, so the kind of the ride IP and the movie IPs that these theme parks in the US use, they will have a technology advantage if they go down that route. The risk for them is if they try and do it in the legacy way and use, you know, like the legacy forms of everybody queuing behind a till, then the guest experience won't be so good for them.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really bad point. I think people's buying habits are absolutely changing, you know. So, I mean, for me and a lot of the friends that I have and people that I work with, we don't carry cash, which traditionally you'd use as a way to describe the Queen. But, you know, we don't carry cash. I've got Apple Pay. I don't need to carry cash. So, you know, there's pubs, bars, shops, all accept Apple Pay. And I think those are the kind of standard things that people, you know, the self-service checkouts, these are all very basic examples of what we're talking about. But when you take it to theme parks, I think you're right. You know, Dubai, I've seen some of the technology and I need to make it over there, but it just looks incredible. And I think the US has an issue, exactly how you were saying, in that it's got all that legacy stuff and it takes a lot longer for them to kind of make that change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the things that we did with a client in Dubai was something called Order Ahead. Mm. So they have a show, and you booked a ticket to see the show at 2 o'clock, and you can order your food for your is actually your aisle where you're going to be sitting in the stadium. So rather than having to queue up to buy the food, you're sat in the, you go to your seat and your food will be delivered in a 15-minute window.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, that's something that Disney certainly would benefit from in shows like Fantasmic, where I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's just chaos. And if you find your seat, you sit down, and then you go and get even like a Diet Coke or some nachos or whatever, and sometimes you end up queuing for like 10-15 minutes, and it takes away from the excitement that you feel from waiting for the show to start.
Exactly. So I do know that that's something that everybody is looking at, and how you make that, you know, that's a classic area of the guest experience, right? That, you know, you've got the kids with you, they want their burger and chips, I want my turkey leg,
yeah,
and all of that, if you can actually have it, you know, pre-ordered. And of course, you can, you know, with the apps or with kiosks even today, just like we see in McDonald's, I mean, you can self-order that, right? So yourself, you know, you can either, you know, whatever the media is, you can do it by the media, or you can do it via your app and actually order that food. So it's not limited anymore to a fixed menu. And you mentioned something about hotels earlier, and that's a key consideration, is the whole, you know, you want one billing area, right? So, and I'm not sure, I mean, you tell me, so you pay, you know, you don't carry cash, but is it better to have everything billed to a central account, including your hotel room, your breakfast, your transport, and your park experience? Or is it acceptable to have, when you get home, all of these different transactions from different companies?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think, you know, where Disney do it right, certainly in Orlando, is that Magic Band experience. So, you know, you can put your credit card onto that Magic Band, and then you don't even need to take your wallet with you. You literally take your Magic Band everywhere, and that's your park ticket, that's your meal plan, that's your entry, you know, fast pass system, everything is on that. If you want to buy some merchandise, you scan your Magic Band, and I think, you know, you don't have to worry about that. And at the end of your trip, you know, Disney go, well, this is how much you've, you know, racked up.
Yeah, but if you can do that for the hotel as well, and you're in all of your travel to site,
yeah,
to the location, that makes it even more easy for the experience. So I do see that collision of ticketing, travel, and the theme park operator themselves, all of that, there will be a convergence as well.
Yeah, and I think that would be fantastic if that can happen, because, you know, sometimes you find that you book five or six different places just to go on one trip, and that just is frustrating, and you're kind of worrying about when's money coming out of my account, all that kind of thing. Whereas, yeah, as you said, if everything can be joined up, then it makes a lot more sense.
And that's a bit like the Amazon experience, isn't it? Because that's what Amazon are actually doing. They're linking all of those traders together on one platform. And that's, you know, somebody like Theme Park Trader could link all those experiences together on one platform.
That would be the dream. Yeah, no, it's a fair point, because, you know, Amazon, I think we always use, not just in general, but in the digital marketing space, which is, you know, where I said I work, we always use it as a prime example, because I can go on my phone, I can click on something, and with my fingerprint or just one click of a button, it's ordered and it's on the way and it's coming the next day. It's just a seamless experience.
There's a Universal park in Japan where the entrance to the park is facial recognition.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That is awesome.
I only learned that last week. I was talking to somebody over there. I wasn't in Japan, but I was on the phone to somebody over there. Yeah, and they've got actual so it's not a fingerprint when you go in. It's not a ticket that you display. It actually just does facial recognition, and that's your entrance to the park, and your entitlement is all based on your facial recognition.
That is awesome. I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love, like, any new technology advancement, I'm very much in favour of 99% of the time. So that sounds awesome.
We on another level, that's what we do for there's a coffee shop in the UK, Harrison Hall, where we actually, you when you go in, when you have to present your loyalty card, but when you present the loyalty card, your picture comes up on the screen.
Yeah.
So they know who you are from that loyalty, you know, from your picture, and they will say, you know, Ryan, do you want your cappuccino today?
That's so great. Yeah.
It's kind of linking that retail experience where loyalty programs have been traditionally everybody's trying to give you a card to become your loyalty card, right? That's moved to an app, and then the next thing is, well, the, you know, if there's a network on the site, it actually just looks at your face, scans your face, knows you're Ryan, has your cappuccino waiting for you.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's taking that Starbucks approach to the next level, I think, because, I almost think that using Starbucks as an example, how often do they get your name wrong on purpose so that you post it on social media and have a laugh?
I don't know.
It just seems to be that whenever they get it wrong, you see people posting it saying, oh, how have they got my name this wrong? And, you know, but it's interesting because it does, where they do get it right, it does offer that kind of slightly personalized experience. And I think the example you're just talking about there, that is taking it to the next level. And that's absolutely what should be done, because you know what? You don't want to spend the time, as little as it takes, you know, in 30 seconds, a minute, whatever it is. If they already know your order and they say, oh, cappuccino, is it? Yeah, perfect. And that automatically is, it just makes a difference to your day, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I go back to 25 years, you used to go on a ride the ride would take your photograph with a, and then you come down and you have to hunt for your photograph on a screen, yeah? And then they'll print off the photograph, yeah, and you'll walk around with a printout all day. I mean, all of that now can be digitized, right? Right to your social media account.
Yep.
So, and the next stage, you know, you can actually have that as live video content, right? So the link, go back to the Kraken ride, that, if you think about the moving together, we all wear today cameras. I don't want to use a brand name, but I can describe it, GoPro. But if you imagine that you will soon be able to get a camera linked to your mobile phone wirelessly. So this is all part of wearables, right? So yeah. Wearable Fitbits is all everybody's into now, but you'll have some kind of wearable on a brooch, or, you know, I know Google Glass didn't work a few years ago, but that technology will come back in some other form of media. So you'll have live video that you will post straight to your social media account. And that represents an absolute step change for the people operating the photo booths, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, it makes that experience a bit more seamless. I think, you know, Disney have started to think about that. So when you take a photo on, say, Splash Mountain, for instance, you go and scan your Magic Band and then it's uploaded straight away into the app. And I think, you know, as you were saying, the next level is coming. It will be here before we know it.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
Great. Well, I think a couple more questions from me. I think we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, we talked about VR, but is that the way you're seeing kind of the future of attractions? Is there anything else that you wanted to add into the mix other than VR and obviously the new technology that's coming in to join up that customer experience? Is there anything else that you've seen or would like to see theme parks do?
No, obviously, from our point of view, I just go back to that, the connected world, and it's about the guest experience, right?
Yeah,
so we're not building the rides, unfortunately. I mean, I think the whole move to virtual reality is is, as you mentioned, it's technology that's been around for a long time, but it's finally coming of age, right?
Yeah.
And the self-ordering, self-serve, those are all the things that people want. And that will change the way, you know, the people in the parks, or the cast members, that is more, you know, in the past about interacting with people in the park in an informative way, or in a traditional sort of commerce way, either they're explaining to them how to get somewhere, entertaining them, or actually transacting with them in terms of a kiosk or an operator. But if you think about when everybody's able to self-serve and do that for themselves, which is what clearly the research that we've been doing says people want to do, then that frees up those cast members to do other things. And you mentioned, you know, robots and technology. So, you know, that I don't know how that's going to develop and how that's going to be different, but, you know, people still like people, right?
Yeah.
So more innovation in terms of what the people do as well on the park to drive the guest experience in conjunction with or connected to the technology, I think the industry needs to think through as well, right? Because you're not going to have the day where you go to a park and there's no cast members there.
No,
it's all like what's the one the TV series
Westworld. Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Let's hope not.
No, let's hope not. No, because that would be you know, I remember seeing Westworld the film 30 years ago. Now I'm watching Westworld the series, and you know, I don't think that's where society actually wants to get to. As you mentioned, people want an entertainment experience. That's why they're doing this. And so there's got to be a place for the what's the IP of the park? So what's the, you know, the intellectual property around, what's the theme? I mean, we've mentioned on this call some of the you know, the classic themes that people have used over the years, like Star Wars and things like that in the past, and we know today is more, you know, Harry Potter and these kinds of things, and that's what really isn't going to go away. The whole marketing machine and the around linking that to entertainments in terms of movies and books and social trends, right? So. Yeah.
I mean, even looking at like the likes of Pandora, the world of Avatar, which is opening in a couple of months at Animal Kingdom, you think 20 years ago, yes, it would have been possible, but it wouldn't have looked the same as James Cameron's Avatar from the movie. Whereas now, the stuff that they're looking to add to that, you know, plants that react to touch, you know, the lighting in that area, the technology going into the attraction, the animatronic that they've got and they've built is just incredible. And you know, it really looks like Disney and obviously other parks as well are starting to embrace technology a lot more, which is really good to see, but while also keeping that vision in recognizing that people want to see those IPs that they know and love.
Well, that's that immersive technology, isn't it? That's why it's not just about roller coasters. Those are the kind of experience for the whole family.
Exactly. Cool. So a couple more questions. Do you have a favourite item of food at a theme park?
Turkey leg.
Yeah, I did think, because you mentioned turkey legs earlier. I do love a turkey leg. They are so good, aren't they? They're just amazing. They go up and up every year, to be fair. But that's the only problem I've got with them. But they are good. They are good. Good choice.
They are. Yeah.
And guess finally, what attraction are you most looking forward to in 2017?
So that's the new Kraken VR ride. Yeah, that's all I'll go on, yeah, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I'm really, really keen to go on that. I'm heading back to Orlando in October, so fingers crossed.
Okay, cool.
That should be good, yeah. For me, it's Pandora this year.
Okay.
Just because the technology going into that looks really cool. But it'd be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, we'll check that out too. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, definitely. It's opening in May. So if you're in Orlando after that, definitely go to Animal Kingdom and check it out.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Brilliant.
Wonderful. I'm off there next week. But
I'm not jealous at all.
Okay, perfect. Well, great talking to you, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining me on the call. It's really, really interesting. So I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to me.
No, good luck. It's been interesting talking to you too, yeah? Excellent.
Great. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mel. So thanks again to Mel Taylor for joining me on that podcast. And we will be back again Monday morning with a brand new episode. Dan and I are recording again on Saturday. But in the meantime, you can find us on our website, themeparktrader.com. We're on Facebook.com/themeparktrader. We're on Twitter @themeparktrader. And if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. And do go and check out the Omnico website. That's omnicogroup.com. So thanks again, and we will see you again on Monday.
Ah, there you are. And just in time, there's a little matter I forgot to mention. Beware of hitchhiking ghosts. They have selected you to fill our quota, and they'll haunt you until you return.